As far as I'm concerned, we could just sing for a while longer. It's hard to follow that up, but it's all right. All right, this morning I'm going to be continuing in 1 Corinthians. I'm going to be doing the last half or third of chapter 9. I did not get through all of 9 the last time, so we'll just pick up where I left off. And that should take us through the end of chapter 9. So this is going to be 1 Corinthians chapter 9, starting in verse 19 through the end of the chapter. I'm just going to go ahead and read it, and then we'll pick up back in verse 19 and just start going through it. For though I am free from all, I have made myself a servant to all, that I might win more of them. To the Jews I became as a Jew in order to win Jews. To those under the law I became as one under the law, though not being myself under the law, that I might win those under the law. To those outside the law I became as one outside the law, not being outside the law of God, but under the law of Christ, that I might win those outside the law. To the weak I became weak, that I might win the weak. I have become all things to all people, that by all means I might save some. I do it all for the sake of the gospel, that I may share with them in its blessings. Do you not know that in a race all the runners run, but only one receives the prize? So run that you may obtain it. Every athlete exercises self-control in all things. They do it to receive a perishable wreath, but we an imperishable. So I do not run aimlessly. I do not box as one beating the air. But I discipline my body and keep it under control, lest after preaching to others, I myself should be disqualified. All right, so I'm going to set the context a little bit again, especially for those who were not here, and besides, it's probably been about a month since I preached the sermon before this. But in chapter 9, right before I started reading, he's making a defense of basically why he does what he does when it comes to preaching the gospel and, you know, spreading the gospel to all the different places he's going. And so, you know, directly before this, he's talking about why he basically works for a living and doesn't, you know, gain all of his living by, you know, people donating money to him and whatever. He's making a defense for that. That's the context that this, that the next part is. So it's just kind of a continuation of that. And I think it's really neat because he's giving us kind of a look into his methodology of how he's going about it. It's not haphazard at all. He has a very clear plan as to why he's doing what he's doing. So there in verse 19, he says, "For though I am free from all, I have made myself a servant to all, that I might win more of them." And I think the key part of that verse is the idea of becoming a servant. So in whatever place he comes, you know, Paul goes to many places. He travels around, you know, comes into these cities. And I think what he's saying is that when he comes to that, he is coming to them from a place of being a servant to them. He's not necessarily coming into this city and saying, "Hey, this is what's going on, this is what's up, and you guys better shape up." That generally is, in human experience, in human psychology, that is not usually a good way to come presenting a presentation. And so he's saying, "I'm coming, and I'm taking on the posture of a servant." You know, and in a way, Paul is he's a salesman. Not the way we think of traveling salesmen often. A lot of times we don't have a very high view of those, which anyway, maybe we should respect them a little more. But so he's coming and he's presenting something new. He's using the same knowledge of human psychology that a salesman would use to make it basically more presentable, more palatable. So he's coming with the posture of a servant. Now, basically today, the whole thing today is going to be kind of a class, as it were, on the Apostle Paul teaching us as modern Christians where we are today, even though this was 2,000 years ago. He's teaching us this is some good methodology, and this is what works when it comes to spreading the gospel. And I thought it was neat, Logan, how you talked what you did this morning about, you know, being bold and being willing to speak when that time comes. And this is literally, this is kind of a continuation of some details of when those times come and you are speaking to someone. These are things that, for the Apostle Paul, really worked well. And I think they're probably the right way to do things, because whatever he did worked, because here we are 2,000 years later and the gospel's still going. And he was a big part of starting to spread that. So number one, come at a situation from the posture of a servant. I'm here, you know, Paul saying, I came and I'm here to serve these people. I'm here to be a service to them, rather than coming as one, you know, looking down on somebody. He's coming from the bottom up. And that tends to make the reception much better. So then, in verse 20, he says, and this section here, kind of from 20 on down, the next couple verses, it's all kind of the same thing. He's saying things kind of twice, but we're still going to kind of go through it one by one. So he says, to the Jews, I became as a Jew in order to win Jews. To those under the law, I became as one under the law, that I might win those under the law. So that section he's talking about specifically coming to the Jewish people. Now, Paul himself was a Jew. So this whole thing of coming to, you know, being as a Jew, becoming as a Jew to the Jews, was not a new thing, or probably not even a hard thing to Paul. It was who he was. And even in Philippians chapter 3, verses 4 to 6, this is what he said about himself. He said, if anyone else thinks he has reason for confidence in the flesh, I have more. Circumcised on the eighth day of the people of Israel, of the tribe of Benjamin, a Hebrew of the Hebrews, as to the law, a Pharisee, as to zeal, a persecutor of the church, as to righteousness under the law, blameless. Now, lest that is taken out of context, go back and read the before and after. He makes very clear he's not like bragging that he's some kind of great person. He's just saying, if we're going to argue in that realm, I have more pedigree as a Jew than you do. But it's after that then that he says, you know, basically he counts all that stuff as not worth a whole lot. But he's making the point that if he's arguing with the Jews at that point, he knows how to be a Jew. He's very good at it. He did it for many years. And so, to the Jews, he comes as a Jew, which is why it's interesting. We're also going through Acts right now, and I really appreciate it because there's a lot of crossover. I think Phil talked about it a couple Sundays ago, how, you know, when he came into the synagogue, usually that's the first place Paul would go when he'd come into a city. First place he went was to the synagogue, because that was, it's, in our context today, it's the same thing as if we go, I mean, same thing but yet different. It's the same thing as if, you know, we go to another community and there's a Mennonite church there, and we go to those people. Not saying that, you know, it's not quite the same, because, you know, the Jews were, before Christ at that point, the Jews were not saved. He was coming presenting something further on than what they had. But it was basically his own people. And all of us will relate to that, because we can go to pretty much any place in the United States, well, not just the United States, but when we go anywhere and we see people that kind of look like us, you have kind of instantly have a connection, and you can go and you can relate to them, usually pretty easily. That's because that's our people. That's what we're familiar with. And that was kind of what Paul was doing when he would go into a city and he'd go to the synagogue first. That's where he started. And he would, when he laid out the gospel to them, he would begin using the scriptures. We say now the Old Testament. At that point, they didn't call it the Old Testament. It was just the scriptures. And he would lay out to them the scriptures because that's what they were familiar with. And he, using that method, he would try to convince them that Jesus is the Christ, is the Messiah that their scriptures pointed to. Sometimes it worked, sometimes it didn't. But that's what he was becoming a Jew to the Jews. And then moving on to verse 21 says, to those outside the law, I became as one outside the law, that I might win those outside the law. So there he's talking then about the Gentiles, to those who did not grow up under the Jewish law, whether they were Greek, whether they were Roman, which at that point in time was very intertwined, because the Roman Empire had taken over the Greek Empire, and it's kind of a continuation of Greek culture, yet a conglomeration of some new stuff. But so those were the people outside the law. And when it came to those, he didn't come and, you know, said, well, this is what the scripture says, and this and this and this. He didn't do that. And an example of that, I'm actually going to read a few verses. I'm not going to talk a whole lot about it because I don't want to steal any thunder from the Sunday school class. It'll be here in just a couple weeks where we get to chapter 17. But I'm going to read just a few verses. It's, I think, verse 6. No. Okay, there it is. I forgot to write down which verse to start in. In verse 22 of chapter 17, it says, so Paul, standing in the midst of the Areopagus, said, men of Athens, I perceive that in every way you are very religious. For as I passed along and observed the objects of your worship, I found also an altar with this inscription, to the unknown God. What therefore you worship as unknown, this I proclaim to you, the God who made the world and everything in it, being Lord of heaven and earth, does not live in temples made by man, nor is he served by human hands as though he needed anything, since he himself gives to all mankind life and breath and everything. And he made from one man every nation of mankind to live on all the face of the earth, having determined allotted periods and the boundaries of their dwelling place, that they should seek God and perhaps feel their way toward him and find him. Yet he is actually not far from each one of us, for in him we live and move and have our being. And even as some of your own poets have said, for we are indeed his offspring. I'm going to stop there, but it kind of goes on. I'm just reading that as an illustration of Paul being as one outside the law to those outside the law. So he came into this city, which it's kind of an interesting story, you know. They have many, at that point, the culture had many different gods. So there's all kinds of different ones that they would worship. And he came into Athens, and while he was walking amongst, I don't know if he was at one of their temples or somewhere, there was an altar with an inscription on it. It said, to the unknown God. Now, I don't know if that's actually, you know, what it was, but Paul, in his, I don't know, he was really smart when it came to some of these things. He picked that thing out and said, okay, I'm going to say that the God that I am coming to present to them is that unknown God. And I guess they didn't really know any different. So, I mean, it seemed to work. There was some that believed, not all did, but some believed. So that was him specifically using things about their culture, something that was was in existence, and he found a loophole to get through and used it to present the gospel. And then moving on, verse 22 is just another way. It says, to the weak, I became weak that I might win the weak. I have become all things to all people so that by all means I might save some. I think that, to the weak becoming weak kind of ties in just a little bit with the first verse there I read in verse 19 where it says he made himself a servant to all. It's very important that we come at people at least with the posture of equal footing or slightly less than. Because when we come at people from a higher footing, it doesn't usually turn out well. And it's a fine line. It's not necessarily a defined thing. It's a lot of times, I think, something that people feel. Like we as human beings, we feel things. We can feel a spirit, or we can feel an air when someone is talking. Like we can easily pick out, sometimes in movies you'll pick out, well, this is the rich person, and they look down on all the other little minions, and it's not something that's even spoken. It's just God gave us humans the ability to feel those kind of things, and it's not usually very difficult to feel that. And Paul is just saying a couple times here, make sure that you come with that spirit of humility, servanthood, and weakness, as it were, when you're coming to those kind of people. I kind of doubt when he came to the Areopagus there in Athens, I kind of doubt that was a case of to the weak I became weak. Because the Greeks, they were very big on like philosophy and flowery language and words and that kind of thing. And in that context, Paul was able to meet that. And so I think probably there he had to kind of step up his game a little bit to get at least close to equal footing. It's a little bit like it would probably have been difficult if Paul would have, it doesn't necessarily say this, I'm kind of making some of this just some observations or guesses as to what probably happened. But I kind of doubt Paul came to the Areopagus with really ratty clothes and uncombed hair and really dirty and beggarly looking. Because they probably would have looked at him and were like, what's this, like, he's got nothing to say to us. Just because, at least in their mind, they're not saved people. And so they will have that air of superiority. And Paul was able to at least step up and meet them on somewhat equal intellectual footing. And there, the end of verse 22, it just kind of wraps everything up in one. It says, I have become all things to all people that by all means I might save some. Now, I'm going to talk a little bit about something that I didn't mention from the beginning. But this passage has been used, especially in our context of life here, in 2021 and in the past, especially in the past 20 years, this passage has been used to kind of, what do I call it? A lot of you guys have heard the term the seeker-sensitive movement, to where a church or churches or whatever, they really, like, how do you want to put it? Maybe dumb down the gospel in order to make it more palatable to people. They trying to, basically get lots of people and draw people in. And there is partial truth in that thought. And the true part of it is literally exactly what I've been talking about. Yes, we need to, in an effort to win people, we need to meet them where they are. However, there's something. As I read through this, I was like, there's something conspicuously missing in Paul's dialogue here about this is what I did to win people. And that thing that's missing is the message. He doesn't ever once, until a little bit later here, actually in verse 23, he says the gospel. But in that previous part, he never once mentions the message or the gospel, which is, that was what he was bringing. He doesn't say, I changed the essence of the message in order to be palatable to people. He said, I am the one that changed. The message, yes, even though like he used cultural things like there in Athens for a pathway in, but when it came down to it, the message is not what changed. And that is, I think, that's what has been the downfall of our modern seeker-sensitive movement, is they have taken the good part of it, which is meet people where you are, but then they have taken the message and they have stripped it of pretty much everything that is worth anything. And when you do that, you end up with nothing. You end up with a very watered-down, powerless gospel. The gospel is not about making people feel good about themselves. Sad but true, it's not. And if you read, you know, you read through Scripture, especially, you know, in the Old Testament, there are certain times when, was it Jeremiah that was in the cave? And was that Jeremiah or Isaiah? Jeremiah. Yeah. So he was in the cave, you know, and all these things, and no, I'm not thinking of the right one. I'm thinking of when maybe it was Isaiah that said, I'm a worm, not a man. That's what he felt like. When he encountered the presence of God, when he encountered God for who he was, he felt very small and insignificant. And that is ultimately what a meeting with the true Christ will do to us at the beginning. It doesn't mean we stay there the whole time, but that's where it begins. It is realizing who we are in the presence of a holy God that gives us any reason. That's why we need the gospel, because we're toast without it. There's only one way. And so as we think about, okay, how am I going to reach out to people? I think that's one very important thing to keep in mind. It is we are supposed to be the ones that adapt into a culture, or find parts of the culture that are simply cultural, and relate to people on that level. It's not the message that needs to be watered down and changed. But here, I guess I'll go into another thing. We've all seen, and this has been a weakness of some of our Anabaptist churches in missions. Not nearly all of them, some do it really well, but there has been a weakness that we have done. And that is going into another culture and imposing upon them our exact formula of the gospel. Whether you go to Jamaica, Africa, Haiti, wherever, To go there and to make little tiny Mount Zions that look pretty much exactly like us is not the way that's supposed to be done. That's not at all what Paul is saying here. There are lots of things about different cultures that are perfectly acceptable. Now, there are also parts of culture that are very unacceptable. But this is where it takes discernment on our part, is to discern what part of this culture that I'm trying to reach is totally benign, as it were. It's a part of their culture, and it's important. And I need to become like that in order to bring the message of truth. Now then, after the message of truth has gained a foothold in a culture, it will eventually change the culture. Case in point, this is a story you probably will all be familiar with. Jim Elliot, down in Ecuador, you know, they went in, and it was him and five total guys. They went in there, and they were all killed. But not long after that, there was another attempt made, and ultimately, the gospel penetrated that place. And whereas culturally, they were, like, it was pretty horrific, a lot of the things they did. I mean, there was so much killing and death and demonic oppression and all that kind of stuff. Yet the gospel came in, and without necessarily telling these people, okay, well, you got to do this and this and this and this and this, as the gospel began to change these people, the culture's different there now. Like, a lot of you have watched the movie The End of the Spear. And that, as I was going through this, that to me was just kind of a case in point of what it looks like to enter a culture, to not try to change the culture from the beginning, but to gain a point of entry, get the gospel to them. Once the gospel gains a foothold, the gospel itself will create the cultural changes that are necessary. That culture now is very different. They don't kill people like they used to. They don't torture people. They don't eat people like they used to. It's completely changed. And actually, wasn't it just like a year or two ago that the guy that actually killed Jim Elliot with the spear, I think he passed away just a couple years ago, if I remember right. It's an amazing story. Those of you who haven't heard it. But in our context here, it was a little bit convicting to me to think about this. And, you know, how often do I just get in my own little cultural bubble here and other people I just don't let people penetrate that bubble? And this is something even as a church that I think we need to be aware of. There are absolutely parts of our culture, as far as our upbringing, that are very good and very okay. But we also need to make sure that we are not taking the parts of culture that are simply that, simply culture, and making them into doctrine. Because Matthew 15 talks, Jesus himself talked very harshly about making commandments out of the traditions of men. And so in our dealings, wherever, you know, a lot of us have jobs that we see a lot of people during the week. I don't even know how many people on a weekly basis, you know, we have a little group of people, but there's hundreds of people we come in contact with on a weekly basis. And a lot of them are very different culturally from us. It doesn't really matter if they live two doors down the street. There's difference in culture, big time. And I want us all, and myself included, to be cognizant of that cultural difference and become what we need to become to those, to whoever it is, in order to gain an entry point for the gospel while maintaining the message of the gospel and not watering that down. All right, I think I'm going to move on from that to the last couple verses. It changes a little bit. Verse 24 says, "Do you not know that in a race all the runners run, but only one receives the prize? So run that you may obtain it. Every athlete exercises self-control in all things. They do it to receive a perishable wreath, but we an imperishable. So I do not run aimlessly. I do not box as one beating the air. But I discipline my body and keep it under control, lest after preaching to others, I myself should be disqualified." So that, it's kind of an odd thing, and I think I've got at least two possible interpretations, and this is one of those things where I would love for input, I would love for, you know, the body of believers to speak on the matter, as it were. But where it says there, "Do you not know that in a race all runners run, but only one receives the prize?" So in our Christian world, we all tend to think, well, heaven is the prize, and everybody that's saved just kind of gets the same thing. That's the easy way to think about it, because it's kind of uncomfortable sometimes to think that there are rewards or different outcomes, a little bit different rewards for different things in the Christian world. But he says here, in a race, there's runners, but only one gets the prize. So I'll give you my two possible interpretations of this, and then I am totally open to having it shot full of holes. But one is that there's a reward, and let me back up and say, There is also a possibility that it's not one or the other. It's possibly some of both. I wanted to say that because Chris is going to get me on that one. So the first one, there's a reward for preaching the gospel and saving souls, and only those who actually do that will receive that reward. I think there's probably something to that, but I don't think it's the only one. The other possible interpretation is that there are competing affections in each one of us. This is more on an individual level. And only the ones that we focus on and strive for will be satisfied. So on every individual level, there's a race going on for the different affections that we have, the different focuses that we have. And ultimately, it's only one that can win. It's like, it's maybe a little bit of an extreme thing, an example, but where Jesus said you cannot serve both God and money. Like, that's absolutely true. I don't think it's always that extreme, but in our life, there are competing things. And it's only what we, only one will ultimately win, like when they're competing against each other, especially like time, for instance. There's only X amount of time in our lives. And ultimately, this points to myself too. A lot of times I say, well, I don't have time for that, or I don't have time for this. Well, the fact is, we always make time for what is most important in our lives. It's just a fact. And so for myself, if there's something that really should be important, and I'm always saying to that thing, well, I don't have time to do that, basically it's just proving to myself, all I need to do is look in the mirror and say, no, that the thing that you are doing is actually the most important to you, because we always make time for the most important things. And so as that goes, not everyone is an evangelist like Paul. You got to remember that in context. So Paul is absolutely gifted as an apostle, as an evangelist. I think there's parts of that that all of us need to take part of. The Great Commission does not say, it's not qualified and says, well, only those who are evangelists are supposed to spread the gospel. No, there's definitely parts of it that all of us are supposed to do. However, it is also true that there are different giftings and different main things that we are gifted to do. And so Paul here, he's speaking from the side of an evangelist. His mission and sole purpose is to go out and to save souls and to win them to the kingdom of God. And so in his own life, that runner is the one that he is feeding, and that one is winning. That's basically what he's saying, is I'm doing everything I possibly can, even to the point of, he says, I discipline my body and keep it under control. That literally means to pummel and make a slave. So his body is totally under control of the Spirit, and the Spirit is dictating what his body does in order to reach the goal that he has. And that goal, especially for Paul, is to save souls. And he's giving us an insight into how he's going about doing that. That will be a little bit different for each one of us. God has gifted each one of you slightly differently. And I think it is important to realize what is God's calling on my life. And is that runner winning in your life? Are you putting forth the effort to make that happen? And that's, I'm talking to myself too. That's why it's kind of poked at me a little bit, because it's easy to just kind of do things haphazardly and let happen as happens. But Paul here, I mean, he says, I don't run aimlessly. I'm not just wailing at the air. I'm not just shooting a shotgun at something and hoping that I'm going to hit it. He has a specific goal and a specific method of how he's going about it. I think that's where I'll end up on chapter 9. Let's just bow our heads to pray. Jesus, just thank you for how you worked in Paul's life, and first of all that you turned him around from what he was when he was young. And you turned that zeal and passion into your kingdom. And because of that, we can learn so much from how he went about doing things. Lord, especially as we deal with people, help us and teach us all how to come to other people in a posture of a servant and humility and on equal footing, and never to put ourselves up above someone or be haughty. Even doesn't matter what the situation is, just help us to be that servant, because that's ultimately what you did too, is you came as a servant, not as a king first of all. So give us the ability, just continue working in our lives to bring us to that point. And Lord, also as we attempt to reach out, give us discernment and wisdom on how to parcel out what is cultural and what is absolute necessary truth that is not to be changed, and what is cultural and how we deal with people. Just give us grace to do that. Just thank you so much, first of all, that you lead us, you care, and you're our shepherd. And we give you glory in your name, I pray. Amen.